If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Happy holidays, everybody. He's Sam McEwen. I'm Ben Duty. It's a holiday week episode of the Pick Six podcast as Nebraska heads to Vegas and the Huskers get set to take on Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl. We've got a special episode here with one topic, and it's a good one. That topic is TJ Latif as QB1 now and potentially into the future for the Cornhuskers. And Sam, here's where I want to start this. I was reading your Rewind column. Excellent, as always, on omaha.com. And you wrote something about TJ Latif that I've heard you say before and heard you and read you before, which is the way Latif's teammates feel about him. This is a young guy, a true sophomore, who's making his fourth career start in the bowl game. Sam, where are you picking this up about this storyline about the way the teammates view Latif?
Well, part of that source is part of that's just the way that I saw him interact with teammates out at UCLA and the way that they sort of rally around him and the things that you can tell that they like about him. There's things about TJ that, and this is in contrast to Dylan Raiola. TJ doesn't do any of the things that Dylan was doing in terms of the fanfare and the celebrity and the sunglasses and all that other stuff. TJ is just TJ. He's a kid that was driving an hour each day just to go to school. To play at a little bit better high school football program than he would have otherwise. He's that kind of guy. And, you know, I think his teammates just respect him and they appreciate that about him. Now, he's not a perfect player, but I think he's got the will of the room, so to speak. And not that Dylan didn't. I think everybody appreciated Dylan's talent and appreciated the situation that he was in. But yeah, I think there's just a sense around Latif that if he plays really well against Utah, is going to be a very strong movement in that locker room for like, hey, he's our guy. Let us rally around him.
Take me back, Park, because you're always the guy on these, and in part because I wasn't here yet and not following all that closely. Bring me back to the Latif recruitment. He comes in. He's obviously 1 year behind Raiola, which is an interesting spot to be, I would imagine, as a quarterback recruit. Go back into the time machine and give us a recap on how the Latif recruitment went, what the staff thought they were getting, and how that all played out.
So he was not going to be a recruit that Dana Holgorsen attracted. Dana Holgorsen knew of him. I think that Dana maybe had recruited him a little bit at Houston before Dana got let go there. But he was basically recruited by Marcus Satterfield and Glenn Thomas. And I think what they liked about him, so he plays at a high school. It's in a really good private school league in California. It's a Catholic league. It's a religious league because he didn't play for a Catholic school. And so it's a really, really good league of football. And the teams are excellent. And he was a baller. Like, he's just kind of a playmaker. He throws well on the run. He was a 3 or 4 star prospect. I don't put a lot of stock in that stuff. I really don't. If you're a 3, if you're a high 3, you're good enough. And a lot of times the best quarterbacks end up were worth high 3s that magically move to 5 when they sign with the right school or whatever. And so he had a skill set. He's good on the run. He's pretty accurate. He's obviously slight, right? So like, he wasn't necessarily going to be a 5 star because he's not 6'3 and 235. He's a slight guy. He's about 6'1.5", 6'2", and he's probably 205, 210. And so he committed to Nebraska. Then obviously Dayton Raiola committed to Nebraska, and then Trey Taylor committed to Nebraska. And in some ways, TJ was very overlooked. He joined the program last year before the Pinstripe Bowl, and he was out there, and he practiced. And I think over the course of the winter, he just gained the confidence and excitement of his teammates to the point where he surpassed Jalen Gramstad for the number 2 job. And once he did that, I think everybody was like, okay, this kid's not bad. Because I think they were real comfortable going into the season with Granddad as the number two because I don't know that they wanted to push Dylan too hard. Then I think what happened is Latif was really good, and they're like, you know what? We're just gonna roll with this kid, and we're gonna let him do what he can do. And he was pretty good, and I think he was going to seriously challenge Raiola for the starting job in 26. Now he'll challenge whoever else, or someone will challenge him.
I want to pick apart a couple games, a couple performances by Latif, and the one I want to start with is his entry into the pit, into the cauldron of this season. In USC game where he enters with a lead in the second half after the Raiola injury, and I remember Sam sitting next to you in the press box just watching this and wondering how it was going to play out. And a couple things, right? It's probably not fair to have expected Latif to have led Nebraska to a victory there. Probably not fair to blame him for the loss, but he does come in with a lead and they lose the game. And that's his first experience being kind of the guy. What's your recollection of how that second half played out and what Latif's role was?
They didn't have the ball a ton, and I don't know if they knew exactly what they wanted to do. When Dylan got hurt, it was 14-6. They lost the football. I think they had three or four possessions after that, and they weren't bathed in glory. The management of the moment wasn't terrific. A lot of that wasn't on TJ. He didn't have great ball security. He fumbled a couple of balls out of bounds. Certainly, there was a little bit of a nervousness to that moment. And he played just okay. I think that Nebraska's defense got a little bit behind the eight ball as you saw in that second half. And it just didn't quite coalesce. I don't know that they were quite ready to move to the offense that we saw against UCLA.
Next up is the UCLA game. And man, I mean, I keep trying to understand how bad that UCLA defense was. And I think the answer is it's not great. But it is a Big Ten defense. And he kind of carved him up. He kind of carved him up. I think he didn't throw an incompletion until the fourth quarter,
Oh,
if I
yeah.
recall correctly. And man, was that. And by the way, it's also the one time all season where Nebraska plays with a big lead in these Big Ten. Fact check me on that. That's the only time the entire year in a Big Ten game where Nebraska actually builds a multi-touchdown lead in the first half, correct?
The Northwestern, they did too. Northwestern came back and tied it. That was the other one.
28-7 was the halftime score in that UCLA game, I think. It's a bigger.
It was
Let me.
21-7 at halftime, and then Emmett gets the throwback to 28-7.
He gets it to 28-7.
They
They had a very, very large lead, is my
did.
point.
They played really well.
They had a huge lead, and Latif's the guy who got it there. How much should the Husker fan make of that performance?
Well, I think they should make quite a bit of it. I think that's the offense that they want to run. And some of what he was able to do in that game, I think, is indicative of where he's going. He's a good thrower on the run. So, right, he's good outside the hash marks, so to speak. He can get on the edge and make a throw. He's pretty good with ball handling skills, and that's what you're looking at there is the fakes, the tightness of the rollouts, how he's processing the management of the execution of the play. As a game manager, they like what he can do. That's all fine with me. I got to trust them on that. That's hard for us to gauge, but they like what he can do there. And he kept the ball out of harm's way. He did that against Penn State and Iowa as well. So he didn't put the ball in a lot of jeopardy, and he's an above average runner. I wouldn't call him an elite runner. Well, he's not Adrian Martinez or anything like that, but he's a good runner, and he's good on the edges throwing the football, and he can elude pressure. And I think the thing that they were frustrated with, and they wouldn't say it all the time, was Dylan Raiola is just not really good at eluding pressure. He's got a Sam Darnold-esque or Rex Grossman-esque struggle with feeling pressure in a weird way. And I just never loved the way that Dylan would move around the pocket. Sometimes he'd make a spectacular play, but he would do it jumping over here, over there. He's got to get better with his pocket presence. I actually think that's what TJ has. TJ has a good pocket presence. He's pretty calm in there. There's things he can work on, but I think the things that they want him to be good at, he is.
I keep thinking this, maybe saying it in some places, that If you gave me like a simulator where I could go back to the 2025 season and simulate the games with slightly different conditions, Latif playing in the Minnesota game is one of the things I would want to watch in my simulator. Latif on the field against Minnesota, probably not getting sacked nine times, maybe leading him to a victory, maybe not, but not getting sacked nine times for crying out loud, I think is maybe a pretty confident assessment. Okay, let me
He
get
wouldn't
back.
know.
So let me bundle the final two games together, understanding that they were different games for different reasons, Penn State and Iowa. And I bundle them together because in both cases, Nebraska really gets run over by the opposing offense in certain cases. They play from behind in a big way, including the entire second half in both games. Latif also has an injury in the Iowa game that he's working through. So if you can bundle those, you can pick them apart, but I'll present it as a bundle. Those final two games where, just went horribly for Nebraska in so many ways. How do you assess Latif in those final two games?
Thought he played okay against Penn State. I don't have a lot of issues there. I think he moved around the pocket pretty well, and he made some throws. Made a real nice couple of throws on third down to Dane Key in that game. Scrambled for a touchdown. I thought he did some good things. Yeah, I thought that was a very educational game for him, and I'm guessing that Nebraska was very frustrated on a number of levels with things that happened in that game, but he wasn't one of them. And I think Dana Holgorsen probably came out and said, "Yeah, that's about what we wanted. You know, wasn't perfect, but it wasn't that bad." And then against Iowa, the hamstring injury is part of the issue. And then, candidly, it's not easy to throw the ball against Iowa. To do, I don't think their plan was good enough against Iowa offensively. And it's possible that the long Emmett Johnson run early just got them thinking, oh, well, we're going to run for 400 yards today. You have to have a robust and dynamic and varied pass plan to beat Iowa, and I just didn't think they had it. And so I don't know that TJ was given the best hand that day, and then the hamstring did not help them because he couldn't get out on the edge and make some of the movement throws that you want. And once you hit a couple of those movement throws, rollout passes, you can start to do other things in your run game that complement that. And when they're unable to do that, it becomes really hard. And then they decided not to throw any short passes in the game. No quick bubble screens, none of that stuff, which I think is crucial to beating Iowa. And I was surprised it wasn't in the game plan.
I got a fun one for you, a little thought experiment, and it will not be TJ Latif specific, but I'm sure he's going to come up. The Husker fan goes into a coma, awakes on January 1st, 2026. You, Sam, get to wake him up. You get to tell him or her, I got some shocking news. Nebraska beat Utah yesterday in the Las Vegas Bowl. Nebraska has beaten a ranked team for the first time since 2016. They've gotten to 8 wins. They win as a two-touchdown underdog. And the person, the Husker fan who wakes up from that coma says, how did that happen, Sam? How on earth did that happen? What's the answer?
Probably a lower scoring game. I don't know that Nebraska can get to 35 or anything. So their defense played well and they had a good plan for Utah's quarterback run game. That would probably be the way it's done. Utah is a very, very good offense. They're a little bit different than some of the offenses that gave Nebraska trouble in the sense that they're going to run their quarterbacks a ton, and Nebraska may have a plan for that they didn't necessarily have for teams like Michigan and Penn State, which, to be clear, were not doing anything fancy. They were simply lining a bunch of tight ends up and they were mauling Nebraska. It may be that Utah tries to do the same thing and said, you know, we're not running our quarterbacks 20 times today. We don't have to. We can just run them a couple of times. But my sense is Utah will run their quarterbacks. And so it's going to come down to whether Nebraska has a good plan for slowing those guys down. If they do, I think they have a chance at winning. If they don't slow them down, I think it's going to be very hard for Nebraska to score 35 or 38 points on Utah.
I think Nebraska loses the game by a big margin, Sam. But I also think if that's not how it plays out, that's one heck of a storyline. This is
Oh,
a post-apocalyptic version of the 2025 season. The season's over. People have been fired. People are moving on. There have been all sorts of postmortems written about it. And if you go in after all that and you win, that's got some juice as we head into January.
no question. No question. If they're able to pull it off, it'll be a completely different ending of the season. And I think you'll see Nebraska go into the offseason with a lot of momentum.
Okay, it could happen. It could happen. And you want something to wish for here this holiday season. There it is. Sam gave you the blueprint. All of that again, centers, a lot of it centers around TJ Lateef, QB1, maybe in 26, but definitely now heading into Las Vegas. He's Sam. I'm Ben. Happy holidays from the Pick Six Pod.